T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
That's right. Fill those cups up. Clint is out today. However, you do have myself, Ron, the show, Hughley, and I am joined with former Houston Texan 12-year vet Wade Smith. And Wade, we got to hear from DeAndre Hopkins again, and he makes the rounds as he has this offseason. And you know he's always getting asked questions about Bill O'Brien and Deshaun Watson. And this time, he made a statement about Deshaun Watson that I think is huge for the Texans this year. This is O'Hop talking about Deshaun Watson going forward.
Man, Deshaun's a warrior. Deshaun's a competitor. As long as he has a football in his hand, that's all he cares about. I know that personally from him, from knowing him over the years. And, man, Deshaun's an elite quarterback, one of the best quarterback I've had a chance to play with so far. And he's able to make players better. And I'm pretty sure that's what he's going to do. He's going to rally his team up to help them win. That's my boy. I wish him nothing but the best. I'm in the NFC, so I hope I see him in a Super Bowl. But obviously, you know, his best target, a guy that he can depend on not being there for him, I'm pretty sure that would impact any quarterback's game.
That's DeAndre Hopkins, Wade. And he said a lot there, but there was one thing that stuck out to me, and that was him talking about Deshaun making players around him better. And he has had a chance and an ability to do that. We've seen it from Clemson and even at his time with the Texans. But, Wade, to me, that seems like the number one thing that needs to jump up. When we say Deshaun's got to get better, that part of it, him making life easier and the game easier for others around him is a huge key for him this year.
No question about it, man. And that's what elite quarterbacks do. Elite quarterbacks make the players around them better. And I'm talking about up front as an offensive line, your running backs, your receivers, everybody that's on the team. You know, elite quarterbacks are supposed to affect them in a positive way. And you can cross sports, have a cross sports comparison when you're talking about guys like LeBron James. He makes all of his teammates better. Well, Deshaun Watson has to be that same type of guy. If we, like we talked about yesterday, you know, we feel like he's going to be a guy that, you know, should be able to lead his team to a Super Bowl. You got to help make your teammates better. And he's done that to this point. He's going to have to continue to do that, especially now because he's the constant. And he's going to be the constant here in Houston for years to come. There's going to be a lot of different pieces that get moved around and put in place, but he's got to be that guy that's always there and always making the guys that's coming in new be better, but also improving on the guys that are returning. So that's what you're going to have to get out of Deshaun Watson.
And right, and you brought up a bit of a position group, but that's one that immediately jumps to mind, Wade, is the offensive line better. Now, this is the best offensive line he's had in front of him, and we'll get to Zach Fulton a bit. His new contract has been his contract has been restructured, so it looks like he is going to be here, and we'll get into that in a bit. But even with Zach Fulton, this is the best offensive line he's had. But I've always thought, man, he should help his offensive line more than he does. With his mobility, this isn't Phillip Rivers or Tom Brady sit back there where coach, where defensive coordinators and players know where they're going to be. He still gets hit far too often for a quarterback as mobile as he is, and it's not always the offensive line's fault. That's a step that he's got to take, and I know as a guy who played in the league in that position, That is one space where he could definitely make his teammates better.
Yeah, Deshaun is one of those guys that he's going to hold on to the ball because he feels like he can make the big play or he can make every play.
Do you ever play with anybody like that?
Like that? No. I've had quarterbacks that just had terrible pocket presence, and so, but I'm talking about it because the thing about Deshaun is he holds on to those balls because he actually does make those plays. Like, yeah. Ben Roethlisberger is one of those quarterbacks that's similar, that he'll hold onto the ball forever and his line will give up more sacks than they would otherwise, but he does have the ability to make those plays. So as an offensive lineman, you can live with it. And the guys that are up front now, they can live with it. But you're exactly right. If he does have a quicker trigger and he does have a quicker decision-making process to where he gets rid of that ball, that's going to make life easier on himself and his physical body, but also make things easier on the offensive line. And then it changes up those stats that people look at and they say, oh, well, the offensive line gave up, you know, X amount of sacks over the year. So that is something where he definitely can improve because it's going to help him physically, but also help those guys up front to where they can keep him clean.
Yeah, I've watched Russell Wilson before. I swear to God, I've looked at some of his offensive linemen and just say, damn, that wasn't on me. That wasn't on me. Like, man, you didn't held it and ran around back here for 8 seconds. How long am I supposed to hold this dude down? But, yeah, that's a space. When I look at that offensive line, it's better, but he's got to help them as well and be better in terms of decisions on when to let it go, when to take off or whatever, because the sack numbers are up. His offensive line has not been great, but it hasn't always been them. That's one space. And then another space to me is, hey, man, go make Kahale Waring I don't want to say a star yet, but go make that cat a player that defensive coordinators have to take a look at. Go do it. Like, to me, he's got the talent and skills. That, to me, is like a project that I look within the season with Deshaun Watson. If Kahale Waring is able to play, that I look at Deshaun to help make that guy a viable threat to where teams look at. Because to me, the quarterback making – that's the perfect thing. When you were saying that earlier, quarterback makes players around him better. That's immediately where I zoomed. Go make Kahale Waring a star.
I tell you what, man, Kahale, he's a guy that when you look at him, he walks in the room, he looks the part. And he's a damn good athlete, and he has a really high ceiling. I think the biggest thing for kind of what you're alluding to is for Kahale, he's going to have to come into camp this year and show that he belongs with the ones. Because if he doesn't take that step to where he belongs with the ones, he's not going to have much opportunity for Deshaun to get him to the level that you're talking about. Because there's two guys in front of him right now, at least, when you got Darren Fells and you got Akins. Those two guys are guys that Deshaun already counts on, depends on, and has trust for. So Kyle's a young guy. I mean, he didn't even play last year. He did training camp, and that was it. And so I would say that you kind of got to temper your expectations for him. But if Deshaun was able to bring that out of him, then that's a hell of a feather that you would have in your cap to say, listen, this dude was playing water polo 3 years ago. Now I got him 40-something catches in his second year. Or actually, it would be his first actual season, but his second year in the league. That would be a remarkable accomplishment.
He has the highest ceiling of anybody in that group, right?
For sure. Yeah, he definitely has the highest ceiling out of all those guys because Darren Fells, you know he is what he is. He was a blocking tight end all the way up until this season. And then all of a sudden, he was getting opportunities to catch passes, and he was doing them, especially earlier in the year. Towards the end, he started to taper off a bit. But, you know, he is what he is. I really love Akins. Akins does a really good job once he gets touches. But he's one of those guys that I kind of put in the Duke Johnson category where this is a guy you got to figure out a way to get Jordan Akins the ball more. But if he gets the ball more, he can be a mismatch guy that you have as well. But Kahale, when you talk about his height, his ability to jump, his athleticism, his speed, overall speed, his upside is definitely higher than anybody else in the tight end room.
Yeah, Smitty, he said a lot when he talked to Jalen and Jacoby on ESPN, and the hot button thing that has been talked about all around. I mean, nationally, this has been one of the top stories everywhere. When the question was posed to Hopkins, hey, are you the best receiver in the game? Is what he said.
I mean, I played against both of those guys last year. We beat the Falcons. Obviously, we lost to the Saints in the last, you know, field goal towards the end of, you know, regulation. I definitely think I'm the best. I know I'm the best. You know, Mike, my boy, I love Mike. We was texting yesterday, but he know if I had Drew Brees my whole career.
All caps.
What these numbers would be. Julio Jones know if I had Matt Ryan my whole career. That's my boy. I trained with Julio, too. He know what these numbers would be. So, you know, those guys are definitely blessed to be in a position where their whole career they had a Pro Bowl quarterback that they spent, you know, multiple seasons with. You know, but I don't complain. I don't make excuses. I go out and work. You know, and obviously, you know, my team won the division championship, man, 5 out of 7 years since I was there. And I think every team in the division went out and tried to get a DB every draft to stop what was coming to them every year. But you know nothing against those guys. But you know I definitely made 3 All Pro first teams. Also.
All right, DeAndre. You can bring that. I mean, DeAndre. Is
come on now, we can't call him out his name now. Come on now, bro. That, just call him Hop. It'll make it easy on yourself. Just call him Hop. Call him Nuke or something like that.
All right. Listen, man, I think that's a fun conversation. It is. It's a fun who's the best receiver? It's a fun conversation. I feel like I'm about to make some people mad. It's a fun conversation, but to me, that's not – when we're talking about football, that's not of importance to me. What is important to me is who affects the game and the game for others around them more. Who is the person – who is the receiver, if we're talking about that position, that defensive coordinators look at and they say to themselves, "Woo! Oh, God, we got to line up against this guy." And I'm not saying that DeAndre Hopkins does not do that, Wade. But that, to me, is more important than who's the best. And I think there are 3 receivers that may not all around be as good as him, but I think there's at least 3 receivers in my mind that come to mind where I think if I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm more concerned about Tyreek Hill. I'm more concerned about Julio Jones. I'm more concerned about Odell Beckham coming off the line of scrimmage pre-snap, what he does. My concern level, the stress level, is higher than Hopkins. That, to me, is more of the conversation football-wise.
I tell you what, I can rock with the Tyreek Hill. I can rock with the Julio Jones. But we talking about Cleveland Browns Odell Beckham? Or are you talking about?
Yes, I'm talking about
New York Giants Odell Beckham.
I'm talking about Odell Beckham, yeah. That guy.
Odell, yes. Beckham's a hell of a receiver. But if I'm a cornerback and I'm covering Odell, I'm like, hell, Baker not going to throw him the ball anyway, so I'm not scared of anything. We rolling court covers towards Jarvis Landry because that's Baker's security blanket. So Odell, he doesn't get the touches that he used to get. So I wouldn't put him on this list as 3 guys that are. And when I hear you talk about it, it sounds like to me you these guys are the ones that are scarier for guys to match up with. It causes the problems and keeps the defensive coordinators up later at night. And I would agree with Ty Hill and Julio Jones. Both of those guys have top end speed. Julio is a grown ass man out there. That's, I don't know how tall is Julio, is 6'3", 6'4", can go up and get every pass. And then Ty Hill is the fastest, if not the fastest, one of the fastest players in the league, period. So yeah, I could rock with those two.
All right, I'm getting crushed about Odell. Just like you said, I would. I'm getting crushed about Odell. No, I will bring it with Odell all day long. All day long. Those 3 guys have one thing in common of a reason why. All right, we got to go to break. I'm not finished with it. I'm going to plead my case for Odell. I am not done with this. We'll get into that coming up now. Ron, the show in. Wade Smith. Yes, I said it. Like DeAndre Hopkins says he's the best receiver in the game. That's fine. That's a fun conversation to me. Who are the ones that affect the game the most and that defensive coordinators – stay up, as Wade said, up at night? And I go with Tyreek Hill. There is nobody to me that dictates coverage or dictates how a secondary and a coach is going to run defense more than Tyreek Hill because of his speed. And I think Julio Jones has great speed as well and dictates coverage in a major way. And I know you think you talked about Landry getting a lot of balls. He does. But still, when you go into those games, the speed of Odell Beckham and his ability to run routes and get away from people and make big plays is something that would scare me as a coordinator. This is my favorite text of the entire week from the 281. Genuine question. This is hilarious, Wade. Show, what is your background and how did you get this job? I've been listening to you for weeks now, and I'm still not sure what your true knowledge of football is.
I guess he felt some type of way, like, man.
Pure luck, sir, or ma'am, whichever it is. Pure luck. No, but I'm sorry. Odell is the one that you had a problem with, and I've seen it. People saying, what has Odell done? His speed and his ability to make big plays still, to me, scares me at a rate or concerns me at a rate more than DeAndre Hopkins. DeAndre, like people say Michael Thomas, I would take DeAndre over Michael Thomas in a heartbeat. I think he can do more and has an element of more big plays than Michael Thomas does. But those guys, they to me, when it comes to big plays and just the fear of big play before the ball is snapped, is in a different space.
Yeah, I tell you what, man. When you look at Hop, like, he's one of those receivers I don't think cornerbacks are afraid of when they line up against him. They know that they can stay with him foot to foot, that they have the quickness and the speed to keep up with him. Their whole thought process is, all right, I'm going to have to get physical with this dude. I know he's strong, but I'm strong too. So they have that bravado, like, you know, I'm going to get physical with this guy, but we're going to do what we do. But it's different when you have a guy that you know that if you make a wrong step, he's going to be by you for a 60, 70-yard touchdown. And so Odell has that ability, but he doesn't get utilized, so I don't think people are afraid of him anymore. But a guy like that we didn't have mentioned yet that I think should be on the list is Mike Evans. Mike Evans is one of those receivers that 6'3", 6'4", jumps out the gym, fast as hell, makes plays. Mike Evans is one of those guys that I'm sure DBs – they stay up at night thinking about, damn, how am I going to stop this dude, especially when you got what's going on the other side as well. That duo is ridiculous over there. So I would put Mike Evans in that category. I'd put him on the list before I would put Odell.
First of all, calm down, Bridget.
That's one of the giggles. You know how that works.
She didn't lit the hell up as soon as you said that. That's not a bad one. I just feel like I've never watched Mike Evans play in a game that mattered. I'm not saying it, I just think there's something to, like,
I tell you what, you're gonna see it this year. Games that matter this year.
There's a different type of pressure when you got to go out there and you got to get some good stuff going, like that. There's a difference to me, so that's the only space for me with Mike Evans is, and I like him a lot and I think he could do a ton. I mean, he just has literally, in my opinion, never played a game that matters. And I want to see that. I think it's easier to play and come up with plays when, man, you down 30 or.
Damn, he's getting all his stats like that?
I'm not saying you all. I'm just saying none of the games matter. Like, none of the games.
Hey, those games early matter. On in the, I mean, listen, Mike Evans is a hell of a football player. I'm not going to get into that part of it. I think the cornerbacks fear Mike Evans before they would possibly fear DeAndre Hopkins. But Hop is going to give him the business regardless. And Odell Beckham, he's a hell of a football player. But like I said, you don't get utilized. Why am I afraid of you? You know what I mean? If I'm going to race somebody, I could race you, Usain Bolt, if I know his ass is not going to start. You know what I mean? If you tell me that I'm going to race Usain Bolt, but he's not going to go when the gun is shot off, then I'm going to be like, hey, I'm going to beat his ass because he can't stay with me. Because he's not going to run. And that's how the way that they use or not use Odell Beckham in Cleveland is criminal. Like, it is criminal.
Yeah. Odell Beckham, someone said, what games has Odell played in that matter? I mean, he went to the playoffs. I mean, Odell's played in the playoffs. So, I mean, let's just not act like this man has just stunk all the way. Hey, big news, and this is near and dear to your heart. This is from our guy, John McClain, who will be with us in the 4 o'clock hour. The Texans go ahead and restructure Zach Fulton's contract. And this looks like, according to John McClain, it is highly unlikely that they continue to pursue Larry Warford. This new deal and the restructuring of the deal is guaranteeing Fulton $5 million this year, It means he'll be the starter at right guard coming up this season. And he was second in the team in snaps at center behind Nick Martin. So he's a good backup piece there, a second piece there. This brings his money to about from $7 million, a little over $7 million to $5 million. So they immediately, the Texans get a little over $2 million right away in terms of money that they can spend under the cap. So with that, it looks like Larry Warford, the pursuit of him is done. We'll talk to John McClain about that later. I'm just curious from you, because I was thinking this way, like, what's the difference specifically between the two, and how much more would Larry Warford improve the offense, you know, as opposed to Zach Fulton? Specifically, what ways does he improve it more, and where is he better than Zach Fulton is?
If I had to label each player and their ability, I would say that, you know, Zach Fulton is solid. He's a solid right guard in NFL. He also, to me, he's a better center than he is a guard. Every time I've seen him play center before he even signed here, when he first signed here, people didn't know exactly where they were going to place him. And I watched him on film and studied him then, and he was really good at center. And he played a bunch of center the year before he came here to Houston. Mm-hmm. But they put him at right guard because they wanted Nick Martin at center, and cool, they rocked that out, and they've been playing at a decent to good level since he's been here. But Zach Fulton is solid. Larry Warford is a legitimate Pro Bowl right guard, and he's been for the past 3 years. I think two of the times he was voted in, the other time he made it as an alternate, but he's not solid. He's damn good. He's a damn good football player. He's not great. He's not elite, but he's a damn good football player. And solid and damn good football player, that's like, you know.
How big a difference is that?
I mean, it's like, you know, getting an 80 in your class or getting an 89 in your class. You know what I mean? I would much rather 89 or 90 if
yeah.
I can get it over a 79 or 80. You know what I mean? And so that's kind of what you're looking at in their ability. And I know you were asking me, we were talking about before, like, what's the difference in how they play and why would I have that assessment? Is Larry Warford is one of those guys that you can line him up, and whoever, I don't care who you put across from him, at the point of attack, he can take that grown man and move him off the ball vertically 2-3 yards at the point of attack. And there's not a lot of offensive linemen that have that ability to do that on a consistent basis. Whereas opposed, Zach Fulton is this type of guy that will cover a guy up, and he might move him a little bit, but he's just not going to just pile drive and just really drive dudes off the line like that. He doesn't have that turnover and ability to do that. Both of those guys get to the second level. Zach Fulton's going to get to the second level, and he's going to lock onto a guy, and the running back will be able to get by him and still get a first down. Was opposed, Warford to get to the second level, he's going to put the dude on his back. That's on a more consistent basis. Warford has that ability. He's just a more physical player at the point of attack. And so when you have the ability to add somebody like that, you would like to. But who knows what Larry Warford wanted as far as his contract-wise. I know they really liked Zach Fulton. And so for them to be able to renegotiate this deal to where they save the Texans money and then they're able to keep their line together, it makes perfect sense from their perspective.
Who do you think would be affected the most by this? Because I want you all to listen to what Wade is saying, and then with that, gauge your own assessment. Do you think the Texans potentially made a mistake by not going ahead and spending what it would have taken to get Larry Warford instead of Zach Fulton? Who is it that he would affect the most if Larry Warford was on the team in terms of improvement of their play?
Well, I think he would affect David Johnson and just the running game in general.
Oof.
In a tremendous manner. And like I said, they're going to be solid regardless. They're going to be able to run the ball, but he just takes you to another level and would help David Johnson tremendously. He would get him that 1650 that we talked about yesterday's show. Now you really want him. But he's just one of those guys that could help in that regard. But to me, you keep Zach Fulton the same. I just feel like this offense is still going to run through David Johnson, but the likelihood of them really just focusing on, hey, we're going to run the ball first and foremost, and that's going to be our plan, I think the chances of that drops significantly because they didn't sign Larry Warford.
Yeah, because we agree that David Johnson thing's got to work. That piece has to work. And now if you say David Johnson is the person that his season would be, like, you're pretty confident, Wade, playing the position, understanding and watching offensive line play better than any of us, you would look at that and say the odds are much greater that David Johnson would have a better season if Larry Warford were the right tackle instead of Zach Fulton.
Well, the right guard, but yes.
I mean, right guard.
Sure, yeah, because that's the thing. You could say it would help Deshaun Watson more because he's the quarterback and, of course, offensive linemen protect quarterbacks. But here's the thing. But when you look at Larry Warford and you compare him to Zach Fulton, they're very similar into how they protect the passer. Their pass blocking abilities are very similar, so you're not going to see that much of a difference between Larry and between Zach. But what you will see the difference is in the run game. And then also it would help it because, listen, if your run game is better, it would help Deshaun in that matter. But if I had to pick one guy and said this guy is going to be affected the most positively if he was there, if Warford was there, it would be David Johnson. David Johnson would definitely wholeheartedly be affected in a positive manner. But when you look at it, listen, Zach Fulton being in there, it's not something that's going to make David Johnson go from a guy that's going to be a 3.2 yard per carry or go from 4.2 to 3.2. It's not a drop off like that. But when you're talking about breaking long runs, when you're talking about just winning at the point of attack on a critical third and two or on a critical third and one or a fourth and one, if you had to choose, you definitely want Larry Warford as opposed to Zach Fulton.
One of the biggest stories that happened yesterday involving sports was understanding the opening of how having fans be able to go into arenas and stadiums at 25% capacity. I think everybody who has a child or a cousin or a niece or a nephew will be able to relate to this conversation coming up. That's right. Fill it up. Coors Light, fill your cup Friday. Wade Smith in. And Ron, the show Hughley in with you as well. All right, you can get involved with this, right? 713-572-4610. You can give a call. Bridget will set you up. You can text in as well with this. And Wade, this is interesting. That came out yesterday that professional stadiums, and not just professional, this also means arenas and stadiums throughout Texas, when Governor Abbott came out and said that 25% of capacity could be in arenas and stadiums. That includes high school. Hell, that includes youth sports. And I think that causes a lot of people to have to think about things and wonder about things, because when you're a parent or guardian or something like that, man, there's not more pressure than precious than your babies. And I wonder where people are in terms of allowing your kids to do what is more normal than anything, and that's participate in youth sports, participate in Little League, participate in basketball, baseball, football, what have you. And I wonder where people are. I feel like I'm not completely there or ready yet with my kids. I know my wife is not there yet. But it's interesting to see now when you see that I wonder where parents are in terms of being able to put their kids in situations like that.
Yeah, man, because, listen, the way things have been going over the past couple of months, the actual, you know, sports and high school sports and youth sports was very much in question, very much in the air of would the kids actually get an opportunity to play. And, of course, everybody's going to take their cues from professional sports. And so with the state of Texas opening up and Abbott issuing the ruling that, hey, you know what, we're going to go ahead and allow 25% of the capacity of stadiums to be filled with stands, actual people watching sports, that signals to me that football will be played and sports will be played in the great state of Texas. And I was joking with a few friends of mine recently, and I was just like, listen, now if you mess around and there's no high school football in the state of Texas, then there is the sign of the apocalypse. Like, this is Armageddon, because when you talk about high school football and you talk about the state of Texas, that is like that. It's religion.
I mean,
that
is what everybody is telling me when I moved down there is, man, this high school football is about to be completely different than anything you've ever experienced.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of anywhere else that could kind of have a similar comparison of as far as the love that whole communities have and support they have for their football programs. and it, I don't think it exists.
I don't think there is.
Yeah, and I've lived all over the country, but I just don't think it exists. And so it was really in question. And so this is great news, but like you said, Show, it puts parents in a position of having to make decisions with their kids and their health. And I think for the most part, based off of how things are showing that, you know, the kids that do or people that do get sick and people that don't get sick from it, I think for the most part, people will be willing and wanting to put their kids back out there. But there is cause for concern, and there is reasoning behind someone saying, you know what, I'm going to hold my kid back. And it's something as me as a youth football coach, it's something that we're going through a process right now is polling parents to seeing like, hey, are you guys willing to do this? And then we can go forward and figure out our safety protocols. Or actually, we're figuring out the safety protocols now, but there's no reason for us to put safety protocols together if the parents aren't comfortable enough to having their kids playing. So it's definitely a question.
Yeah, that's and I see this on the text line. If I said arenas, open air stadiums was what it was talked about from the governor, not arenas. So arenas that stadiums or arenas that can open up like Minute Maid and with no enclosure. That's interesting because I wonder, as you're just talking about that, and Bridget, I know you've lived in Texas your whole life and you've lived there, and it feels like it's a bigger deal. This would be a bigger deal than other places, because if high school football is that big, then that means whatever led up to it is that big as well. So Little League, like stuff like that, it's a big deal as well. I wonder, in the state of Texas, is this something that's even a bigger struggle from parents? Because this is just a way of life. If you know, football, especially football, high school football, Little League football, I wonder the struggle it is even particular to this state.
Yeah, and when you mentioned Little League football, I thought to myself, there's one other state that has that I would say is on the same level. If you talk about Optimist football in Florida, in South Florida, I'm talking about Little League football, that is probably the only other place in the country where I say it's serious as it is here in Texas as far as people following. I'm talking about, you got people betting on 10 and 11 year olds playing football in South Florida. Like that's why you have so many Andre Johnsons and Willis McGahees and all these type of guys that come out of South Florida, because they started at such a young age. But it's that serious it's to that degree here in Texas. And so, yeah, you got to think that there are significant amount of people that have influence that are saying, hey, we got to figure out a way to make this happen. And that's why I was joking with my people about, like, listen, if we don't play high school football in Texas, that means that this thing is so serious, because this is not a state that is going to kowtow to pretty much anything. And this is not a state that is going to be conservative when it comes to this particular virus and pandemic. This state is going to say, like, listen, we're going to figure out a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually right now, Wade, we're really fortunate to be joined by a Houston native himself, Robert Flores of the MLB Network, and we're excited to be joined by him. And you've lived here. How do you think this will shake up now that Governor Abbott came out and said that, you know, professional stadium or arenas or stadiums that have roofs that can open up open-air stadiums, also Little League, youth sports, college, that stuff is going to be able to happen. Do you think parents are going to be have a struggle with letting their kids go out and play in the state of Texas, being that high school and sports like that are so important in this state?
I think it just depends on the parent themselves. I mean, there's going to be some that are a little bit more hesitant to let their child play. I also think it depends on what the sport is, right? I mean, if it's basketball, I mean, that just by nature, that requires a little bit more closer contact with your opponent, whereas opposed to baseball or let's say volleyball, or maybe it's a little bit, you know, you're farther away from your opponent. I mean, especially baseball. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out and how professional sports leagues, how they react to it, and also all the way down to the parents at home.
It is. Robert Flores, you know what else is interesting to see how it plays out? If there will be a baseball season. Please just let us know. Will people here be able to see their Astros play? Your gut feeling as someone is tied in like you are, it's looking a little prickly right now. Do you think we'll get a season started?
I do. My gut feeling is that we're still going to have baseball. How many games, where, format, I don't know. But I think there's going to be baseball because, one, it's just there's too many smart people on both sides from the ownership perspective as well as the players' union for something like this, for negotiations, protracted negotiations to fall in the way of what makes sense. As long as it's safe, as long as it's appropriate, as long as that the two sides have consulted with local and city and federal health officials to make sure that it is appropriate and safe, then it just makes too much sense for us not to have baseball. So my gut feeling is I think we are going to have some baseball. But like you said, I mean, this is a negotiation period, and unfortunately it is kind of playing out publicly, so to speak, but sometimes that happens.
Bro, Flo, listen, man, you listen to the different proposals that Major League Baseball owners gave to the players. The first one that they gave, of course, it was, hey, we're going to prorate your salaries for the year. Basically, you're going to cut your salaries in half. But then the second proposal came out. And just from your perspective, man, because from my perspective, I feel like it was totally out of line, disrespectful. Yeah. Do the owners have a leg to stand on with this, or is this them just being opportunists in a situation where now you have a pandemic and this is an opportunity to get make some headway in some of the leverage they lost in negotiations with the powerful baseball union?
Yeah, you know, I know that has been floated around and been speculated about and written on. I just can't, and maybe I'm naive, but I just can't imagine that the ownership, that the league would use this as an opportunity to try to implement something going forward, you know, as a kind of set in stone, as a new way of a new economic model, quote unquote. I just can't imagine that they would think like that they would have that in the back of their mind. I just think that there's so many other issues that both sides have to think about, have to come together, have to resolve. I just think that those issues are far more pressing than trying to establish some sort of quote unquote new economic model. And like I said, maybe I'm naive, but I just think that this is such it's so complicated, it's so unprecedented that it is it's going to take a lot. It's going to take a lot of conversation. It's going to take a lot of negotiation. And as I said, I think there's too many smart people on both sides for it not to happen. And then you throw in the added element of we are in a time crunch here, right? I mean, we're sitting on the brink of June 1st, right? So you really got a lot of work to do, a lot of serious things to discuss in a rather tight window. So that complicates matters as well.
Robert Flores, MLB Network with us. I mean, do you think this second pay cut proposal is fair that the owners are putting on the players?
That's a tough one for me to answer because I haven't seen it, right? I mean I just know what has been reported. Yeah. And look, these are unprecedented times, and having fans at the game, having fans buy beverages and parking and all the things that fans do and provide for the sport, not just economically, but everything. But this is just so, I mean, who could have imagined this, right? I mean, it's such a surreal time that I just think that there's so many difficult issues that the two sides have to come together and resolve. And the good thing about, and you know, just the idea of negotiation is both sides have to find somewhere in the middle to meet on. And maybe it's going to be a deal that neither side is happy with. And maybe that symbolizes, hey, maybe it is a good deal. Maybe it's a fair deal when both sides kind of walk away bruised a little bit. But I think it's going to I think it's going to happen, and I think it's just going to be, you know, it may get a little, as you said, prickly for a couple of more days, longer, but I think it's going to happen. That's my gut feeling.
Roflo, when you talk about this potential ability for Major League Baseball to play when in the middle of a pandemic, just talk about the opportunity they have to create headway with fans throughout the country and throughout the world if they're able to get a deal done and how that could help them tremendously going forward.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There's a tremendous while there's a lot of work and a lot of serious things that have to be discussed and obstacles overcome, as you said, there's an opportunity here. The sporting public is starving for live competition, and no matter in what form. Heck, I mean, we were all enthralled by seeing Tom Brady split his pants and play terrible golf for 12 holes. So, I mean, we're looking for anything, right? So I think there's a tremendous opportunity for the players and for Major League Baseball as a whole, as a baseball, as an industry, to come together and put on under very, you know, unusual and tough conditions, you know, get out there and play and kind of be a beacon of hope and be a beacon of normalcy for the sporting public. And as I said before, and I think I've said on this show, if that means that the games have to look a little bit different to accommodate these unusual conditions, then yeah, let's do it. Let's just embrace it. Let's try some things. I mean, we all know that this season is weird, and whoever wins whatever championship you have or how that's determined, yeah, it's going to be, as we look back on it, maybe it's going to be kind of, oh yeah, that was that year that it was the pandemic. I mean, that's fine. Let's just deal with it. Let's just embrace it. And if the things have to be tried and experimented with, let's just put everything on the table.
All right, Robert, your gut thoughts on this, and I love your confidence. You're making me feel better about potentially being able to have baseball back here. Let's say they don't get a deal worked out, and let's say the reason that Major League Baseball doesn't return this year is due to the fact of basically they couldn't get an agreement on money.
Right.
How bad would that put the game back? Is this 94 territory with fans? I'm just curious, if they don't figure this out and they don't play, not due to the pandemic, but due to not being able to agree upon money, where would this put them?
That's a very tough question. And, you know, you mentioned 94 and the cancellation of that season. I mean, that is arguably the darkest period in the league's history, in the game's history. I would hope it doesn't come to that, because it would just be a real, it would be disappointing. It would be disheartening. And I think, just going back to the previous topic, I think it'd just be, would just be a missed opportunity. And I continue to go back to the notion that there's too much at stake for both sides, and there's too many smart people on both sides for this thing not to happen. So that's why my gut is telling me that something will get done. It is unfortunate, you know, that some of the, you know, a little bit of the public discourse over this has come out, but all that will be forgotten. All that will be forgiven once there is baseball on the field. Even if that means there's no fans in the stands and it's not the baseball we're all quite used to as far as rules and format, whatever. As long as they can come together, solve these issues, and put the game first, put the sporting public first, and do what's best for those parties.
We're speaking with Robert Flores of MLB Network here on Sports Radio 610. And the last question I got for you is this, Roflo. If we had to put a deadline to when something needs to get done in order for baseball to go forward and actually be able to put together an 82-game or 100-game season, like, when should we be looking? Because it's coming, like you talked about a little bit before.
Yeah.
We're coming up against it. So when would you say is kind of – the dividing line of when something needs to be accomplished and a deal is made?
I mean, just for me, and this is just pure speculation on my part, I think like mid-June. I think you're kind of looking at that time frame as as when you would want to see somewhat of a working plan going forward of what we are going to do. Because, you know, the players are going to need spring training 2.0, right? I mean, and I would think that's anywhere between 2-3 weeks. I'm sure that the pitchers would love another month, but I don't know if that can work within the current time frame. But I keep going back to, like, you know, mid-June, something like that for me is when I kind of point to, okay, guys, let's see what we have here, and this is our plan going forward, and this is what we're going to do, and let's get the next steps going in motion.
So if we don't have a deal by Father's Day, we're in trouble. That's kind of, to me, I look at it, Father's Day, if Father's Day we have a deal done, if we don't have a deal done, we're in trouble if we want to see Major League Baseball this year.
Like I said, that for me is just pure speculation on my part, but that I'm because if you say mid-June, really, and you're talking about a 2-3 week spring training, that kind of puts you in early July, and then maybe you kind of have your opening day on July 4th. I mean, just think about the possibilities of that, the optics and just the pageantry of the baseball is back and it's on, and we're bringing it to you the beginning of a 2020 season that's going to be a little bit unusual, but we're bringing it to you on our nation's holiday. So I think there's a lot of good there, but like I said, mid June kind of for me is the time where I would love to see something concrete going forward.
Robert Flores, MLB Network, Houston native. We appreciate you joining us, and thank you for giving us a little bit more on this situation of baseball and the deal with between the owners and the players.
Hey, you got it, guys. Hopefully, maybe there's some. Maybe it's more than the Astros that are playing there at Minute Maid, you know. So
yeah,
there's all sorts of options that are being discussed, but hopefully we get to see some baseball very, very soon.
Very true. Thank you so much, Robert Flores, MLB Network. So Wade, after hearing and seeing the numbers we've seen, Father's Day, do you see that happening? Can you envision a deal, because somebody is going to have to come to the table and make a completely 180 for this to happen.
I tell you what, man, when I hear Roflo talk, I hear the optimism in his voice, and I appreciate that, and I love that, but it doesn't seem realistic right now, and it sucks. Like you mentioned, they're going to have to be – the owners are going to have to say, all right, I know we threw this proposal out there, but we're going to have to scrap that, because the proposal that the players – pushed back at them actually put the owners on the line for more money than what the original proposal was. You know what I mean? So they're both going to have to come to a compromise and for it to get done. And we'll see, but I agree. If it's not done by Father's Day, I don't see how it gets done. So we got about 2.5 weeks. I'm looking forward to Father's Day this year too. I think we're going to get some good gifts, folks. I don't know. You get good gifts on Father's Day, man.
I plead the fifth. Man, somebody can do better. I want to hear it. This is the question I'm posing to everybody who I want to get into coming up next. I believe your expectations for the Texans this season should be exactly the same that it was once they lost in Arrowhead to Kansas City. It should not have changed from then to where you are now. We'll discuss that coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.